Hello and welcome to your Una series podcast. On today's series, I am thrilled to welcome Dr. Tamsin Lewis. Dr. Tam is an amazing doctor, mother, sportswoman, and I was trying to remember her credentials, but I couldn't. So I'm going to read a little set of credentials I found for her that are absolutely amazing. Dr. Tam, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Nice to be here. We've had a few IT hurdles along the way.
Absolutely. Gosh, we had a few issues to try and connect, but it's happening now and I'm really so happy. So guys, listen to who is Dr. Tamsin Lewis, professionally speaking. We'll speak more about her in a minute. But she's the medical director applying the science and art of longevity to practice. So she has a platform called Wellgevity. And Dr. Tam is a medical doctor qualified with honours from King's College London and Guy's and St. Thomas' Hospital. She has a BSc in neuroscience and the biology of ageing and specialist training in psychiatry and sports medicine with further education in nutritional and functional medicine. She is a member of the Royal College of Psychiatrists and trustees of the British Society of Lifestyle Medicine. Additionally, serves on the advisory board of Humanity Health, Omnos Me, both companies democratizing proactive consumer healthcare, and she's also the medical director of the Rose Bar, which is a longevity program being set up in Ibiza, London, and New York City, I think. That's quite a lot. Well done, Dr. Tam, for doing all this at such a young age. But today we're here to speak about long COVID because I think that you are probably one of the most interesting case for people to hear about, because you are a doctor, you're an incredible sports woman. I think we can speak a bit about your performances in a minute, so people just realize how good you are, just simply. And then you had COVID, and I think that it's left you with a little bit of physical and mental changes that I think it'd be nice to share with us. And I hope that then we can deep dive into what you think is happening physiologically in general, but in your case in particular, because I think that's what people are trying to figure out right now, is what is long COVID, what it means, how do we define it, are there specific symptoms, are there similar symptoms to the ones that people have from COVID, and most importantly, what do we do with it? So, Dr. Tam, what do you tell us about what happened to you in terms of having COVID the first time, and how did you feel, and then how did you think it turned into what you would describe as long COVID now?
Wow, it's almost traumatizing going back, but it has kind of been my life day in and day out since early March 2020, you know, trying to figure out what this is from a scientific perspective, a personal perspective. How do I get better from this? How do we help other people get better from this? You know, what is it? I think it started for me, like many people, in the first wave of COVID in London, people coming back from skiing. You know, I was seeing quite a few people in the clinic coughing, and we couldn't even test for COVID then, so we didn't really know, you know, what it was. And you know, at that point the narrative was like, healthy people will be fine, it's just like the flu. And I remember, you know, having quite a few people coughing and thinking that was a bit strange. And then my daughter had a fever, and she kissed me on the lips. And as she was kissing me on the lips, because she was going with her dad, she kind of coughed into my mouth. And the next, basically like 12 hours later, it was like my stomach blew up. I just started to sweat, my Aura ring, which is this device that you wear that measures your heart rate, your body temperature, etc. That sort of flagged red, and then it just became
what came up with the Aura ring, what markers came up first?
Body temperature was raised, I think 3.5 Fahrenheit. My heart rate was raised, my heart rate variability was lowered.
All my signs that you're being challenged, basically, that the physiology and the
my readiness score was like 45.
One question here, interestingly, because we always, you know, we've heard that it takes up to 15 days of incubation, right? You could have it before you experience the symptoms. But in this instance, because I have a similar experience to you, I think I've got it very quickly, and I was in practice as well in March. And I think my wife came back from Italy, where it was the first cluster, as we all remember, when the whole country closed down, and she was totally asymptomatic and gave it to me, but I had it within 24 hours as well, which I also thought was quite curious, you know, about the turnover between exposure and symptomatology was pretty much not instant, but not far off. That's also something curious, I find.
What you mean, infection and then symptoms coming on?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think part of that might be viral load, so how much you're given in one dose. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it can be, you know, if you're getting a big load, then your immune system kind of goes, wow, what is this? Mm. And I think that happened to me. It kind of got in and in and in, like through the gut, first of all, and then it was in my lungs. And then at day 7, I had what we now know to be called the cytokine storm, which was basically my immune system went, holy crap, I'm full of this stuff, what do we then do? And it drops bombs on things. And that was when I experienced this pain around my hips and lower back, which was a bit like childbirth. Mm. I mean, I remember just wrangling around in the bed, sweaty, hot, not being able to breathe properly, being on the phone to NHS 111, and they were like, well, you know, I've got lots of people calling and we don't really know what to do with you. Should we send an ambulance? They send an ambulance. They measure your oxygen saturations at rest, which in an athlete, you know, they are largely normal unless you challenge the body. So my oxygen saturations were normal until I walked, and it took weeks to figure this out. When I walked down, you know, along the corridor, that was when they would drop. So with effort, but at rest, you know, the body has a good way of compensating. Mm-hmm. And for me, over time, that was, you know, you raise your hemoglobin levels, which is your red blood cells, a bit like altitude, right? Because your body is. So I think that's what long COVID or COVID does to some people. And I think the severity of illness we now know depends on your viral load. Like how, for me, I had a direct delivery. I had a lot of delivery and then a direct one. And so my body, you know, I must have had billions of particles floating around, and that's difficult to clear. I remember, you know, eventually, because I was running a company that did testing, we got hands on a private test 3 weeks after I first felt symptoms, and I was still positive. And that would be deemed now to be not normal, right? You usually clear the virus within a few weeks, unless it's still picking up dead virus, which in some case it does, or inactivated virus. So I think it was, you know, there's a lot of misinformation. I think now what we now know that is viral load is a thing. Your immune system reaction to the virus depends on often like sex. You're basically female or male. If you're in the perimenopause, you're more likely to have an overreaction of your immune system, which can develop autoimmunity. Mm-hmm. We'll probably come back to that. If you're metabolically unhealthy, so if you're obese, if you've got type 2 diabetes, you're more likely to have to do badly with the virus. You know, end up in hospital. Potentially, there's a lot of problems with clotting. We know that now in long COVID, people still have microclots. You know, if you look at the blood under a microscope, it's still clotty.
Before we move into the whole long COVID, which is, let's finish with the COVID exposition and what it does to you. Because when would you say, because I've read in preparing for this show, and it was like, you know, between 4 and 12 weeks. After 12 weeks is when they're officially now saying it's long COVID. But the symptomatology is tricky to trace because there are so many different things. You said there was, you know, what's the relationship? Because it seems that in the data so far, you can't find any correlation between the intensity of how you experienced COVID in the first place and if you're going to have long COVID or not. So what's interesting is that if you were overloaded, or if your immune system was kind of weak at the moment, would it be physiologically or would it be mentally, because you know, you're a challenge in your life, socially speaking, let's say, if you recover from it, you could have recovered there and then. But sometimes it just becomes long COVID. But also some people who have very mild symptoms will develop long COVID. So it seems that a transformation of that COVID exposition to long COVID, long haulers, is yet to be discovered or understood. What do you think of that? Because in your case, you are physiologically strong, right? You were, and you are still very healthy. So you're not a good candidate for long COVID, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a tricky one because I think there's two aspects to being healthy, right? I was fit, cardiovascularly fit, but, you know, I had a lot of, I know you did a recent talk on stress and the immune system. I was very stressed, you know, I was largely single parenting, running a business, running around London, getting cold on a bike, you know, in and out of the sauna, sweating, cold, you know. So there was a lot of stresses on my immune system. Plus, I lived in a moldy house, so my immune system was already what we call hypervigilant. So I think there's a part of it is that. I think there's a stress and that immunocompromise, and there's also what we call co-infections. So if you have, you know, gut problems, for example, if you, a lot of us have low lying dysbiosis, right? And which is an imbalance in the gut. And I know that my years as an athlete and with stress encourages that. So, you know, poor gut health that I was working on, but it was something that, was there, mold, immune trigger, environmental stress. So all of those predispose you to developing, or to having more complications from COVID in the first place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I tried every drug known to man at that start. You know, I was taking hydroxychloroquine. I was taking, which made me feel terrible, you know, the Trump drug, as it then became the malaria drug. It dropped my, I didn't realize at the time until I then was Googling and thinking it drops your blood sugar. So, you know, it was making me hyperglycemic and I nearly passed out a few times because I'd lost appetite. Azithromycin, a Z-Pak, you know, that has been shown to be protective of the lungs in COVID. So I took that, you know, every vitamin C, zinc, vitamin A complex you can known to man. And maybe I would have been worse off, right? So you can imagine this time I was in Devon because I went before COVID, you know, when before lockdown, I kind of drove myself and Sophia to Devon where I grew up to be away from the kind of London lockdown. And I was taking my own blood and sending it to the lab in London. And I just remember like the needle came out and it was like there was, it was clots on the end of the needle. And we didn't think anything of it, but you get to know yourself having been a biohacker and testing your blood. And I remember thinking, why is my blood so clotty? So that was something that we didn't really know about. But I started taking aspirin because, you
just
know, I started.
As a preventative measure. Anyway, I would have definitely done that. Just make sure my blood is fluid enough because you don't clotting in. It's not always a great idea, isn't it, in your circulation?
No, so, no, but that's how they started. That's why people started to die, right?
Correct.
They
started getting. What is your, so, I mean, you've been through a long journey now and, you know, you've just shared with us quite a lot of your trials at the beginning to try and shift things around. Now, how far would you say, and what have you discovered, first of all, in terms of, let's say, science and pure metabolism and how long COVID is changing, and then we can see how you change mentally through that process. But first of all, how far do you think you are on that route to recovery?
I was doing a lot better, actually. I started on something called low-dose naltrexone because my residual symptoms were joint inflammation, as you know, and a little bit of, I had a CT scan 3 months after my first COVID infection, and I still had, you know, widespread inflammation, and that's 9 months, I then had a follow-up CT scan, and it still showed, you know, scarring, for want of a better term, in the left lobe. And every time I get some kind of illness, some cough, cold, run down, that lung flares up and I get back pain and all sorts of things. So it's left me effectively disabled in that sense. It left me unable to exercise with any intensity. Although I started, as I said, on this low dose naltrexone, which can modify inflammation.
Yeah.
Inflammation or inflammation, probably both. And that helped reduce inflammation. It helped me be able to sort of jog and start being able to exercise again. But we're going through a reset. I'm in, that's why I'm in my bedroom, because I'm in sort of supposed quarantine because a housemate or someone that we're living with has tested positive for COVID. So
We're recording this in nearly mid-December, and lots of people, there's a huge exposition now, and most people are experiencing symptoms of COVID. And it's, again, not to go into too much details, but it seems weird that there's so many vaccinated people getting it again and boosters. I hope it's just bringing the symptoms down, but just around me here in London, I've had the most incredible numbers that are just falling off, you know, one after the other. And they're coming with new kind of symptoms as well. Like, for example, two people who didn't had to cancel coming to me today had acute conjunctivitis to the point she sent me a picture. It was actually, I've never really seen it this way, like pus around the eye, both eyes, like really, like a really acute conjunctivitis, and with no predisposing factor on any eye issue before, never had an issue like that, and just kind of went to bed yesterday, woke up, boom, both eyes totally. And so it's difficult to know, is it COVID, is it not? It's just because the viral load is kind of decreasing, but it's kind of, I'm curious. I was telling you, we shared a few conversations before when we tried about this podcast. And I was telling you, I was reading some interesting research. First of all, I want to say long COVID is now a thing, because but it took a year, right? Because even in the French government, it took a year for it to be recognized at the assembly, which is exactly a year after the first, let's say, March 20. So it was April 21. But it has a huge impact on social activity and economy, because lots of mostly people that have physical jobs, and I think we could be accounted in those because we are frontally confrontation to our patient, is that they can't work. You know, if you have a physical job, you can't work anymore. For it's impossible to focus. It's impossible to, you feel too weak. You're short of breath, as you said, because your body can't compensate when you're at rest. But as soon as you're active, you know, it just goes down so quickly. So this has to be taken into account. But the studies are weird because they all come with such weird data. For example, we were talking about the fact that it seems to be there are different clusters and different symptoms, and there's no reason why, because there's no correlation with the peoples. For the same singularity of patients, certain areas seems to have a certain time of symptoms and also a certain intensity of symptoms. And the more research happens, it seems that it's not necessarily due to predisposing factors, it's not necessarily due to even what people eat in this region or if there's more pollutant. It's totally, it seems, environmental free. It's just the location that makes the COVID different. Now, have you heard or seen anything like this with any other virus? I mean, why is it so strange, do you think? Why is this thing so strange?
I mean, you, everyone's probably heard conspiracy theories around and COVID and its origins. I mean, listen, we all have personal ideas about it too, but it feels very like it felt very dark, right? Yeah. It felt like a war between myself, whatever that is, right? You know, my idea of myself, yeah, physiologically, and something a lot, you know, a war on another force, you know, and that's how it felt, like this battle between what's going to win and what's not. So I don't want to come across woo in that, but I'm just saying that it very felt a very dark energy, and I felt very close to death or whatever I knew to be death at times, right? Losing myself. And that might have been wrapped in the sense of fear, the you know, the media and all of that. But it's definitely forced me to come, you know, to face that. And it's been very interested in that sense.
Did you find, saying this, and we kind of join ideas around the idea of energy. But I find that, did you find growth then? You know, because obviously any challenge like such, will you come out with a different view on life, different perspective, maybe even different beliefs, but also a different hope about how we can change and now the power of resilience.
Yes, I did. But I think, you know, me and many others with long COVID have been tested, because, and I'm thinking this in terms of my athletic background, yeah, when you're used to putting the work in and getting results, whereas COVID, it's long COVID, it's very much feel, you know, you're constantly putting work in and then you get hit with, you know, another relapse. And it has been a bit like this with long COVID. You kind of get better and then something else comes up. And so, yes, it's forced me to adapt. It's forced me to, yeah, do a lot more introspective work, mm-hmm, to use one of your favorite terms.
That you don't like. Really,
I feel is self-indulgent, but that might be my mother's voice in my ear.
But as a doctor now, because you obviously...
Yes. I didn't finish on where it's come from. So, you know, definitely I'm bearing towards that lab leak, mm-hmm, you know, theory where this is where a virus was modified and then somehow was leaked, whether, you know, purposely or not, I don't know. And I think the fact that it's affected us globally, yeah, is very interesting. And I don't want to get into the vaccine sort of, you know, agenda or non-agenda, but it is certainly interesting the way it has acted on different, or caused our bodies to react against itself, which is causing the pathology, the problems.
So you mentioned it at the beginning of this talk, and I think it's a big word that many people heard but don't really know what it means. It's autoimmune diseases, autoimmune syndromes. So just to resume quickly, it's when your body has its own immunity, which are cells that are meant to recognize cells that are not you and destroy them, suddenly seem to find this modulation a little bit tricky and start attacking your own cells. So that's what an autoimmune disease is in a very simplistic way. And it seems that through COVID, or even more long COVID, there are traces and signs of triggers of autoimmune disease or syndrome. Have you come across lots of them, and how do you understand this process?
I think we now know that it can, in some people, trigger autoimmune disease. How we measure that tends to be organ specific. So for some people, they've developed thyroid autoimmunity, which is, you know, and then become hypothyroid, so antibodies. So autoimmunity is when you're developing antibodies that then a self-attack, attack certain tissues. So we know people have developed diabetes, they've developed thyroid problems, they've developed brain fog and cognitive dysfunction, which may be as a result of autoimmune attack, which causes inflammation. I have developed joint symptoms, which have an autoimmune basis.
Like rheumatoid arthritis, in a way.
Well, yes, but when I did the rheumatoid factor and tests,
in terms of symptoms, I'm saying, not in terms of the process. I'm thinking the same kind of feeling.
The diagnosis, you know, it very much felt, and I was speaking to my doctor, that I had rheumatoid. You know, I was having redness around my wrists, my hands, all of it. And it looked pathologically like rheumatoid, but the rheumatoid factor was negative, although there were some autoimmune flags in a blood test. And I get this question quite a lot. How do I measure autoimmunity post-COVID?
Yeah.
And you can, you know, you can be guided by your physician and do an autoantibody test, ANA, and different autoantibody screens on a blood test for sure. But, you know, then you have to look at how do you deal with it? How do you deal with autoimmunity? And you come back down to lifestyle.
Diet.
You have to diet, you know, avoiding triggers, environmental, and also, you know, environmental triggers, but also, food triggers, etc., stress triggers, working on gut health.
You said something to me very interesting the other day, and I liked it. And it's that in the history of trauma, and I know this word again is used quite widely, but we could speak about physiology not being safe. So it's the analogy between not really feeling safe in our environment or in ourselves, and that has a transposition into our physiology not being safe, which is also maybe one of the predisposing factors for people to get it a bit stronger in terms of symptoms in the first exposition, and maybe transforming into long COVID. And I find that this is a very, you know, it's a very interesting thought, is to also, as a preventative way or as a curative way for people who have long COVID, to think, how do I recreate, and you know, I like speaking about this, but you know, the social engaging, safe feeling that also will trickle down to our physiology somehow. It's interesting for people to, I think, try to see that there's a real correlation between the way you feel and you sense yourself and the way your cells behave, because at the end of the day, you're made of those cells. So there's a link between the two. And I think that that's part of the work you're doing, right? The work you're doing now, which I won't say is an introspection. I will say it's just a journey into yourself from inside out, understanding how you know, how you feel, discovering more of what is available to be able to tap into this. So now that you know, as a doctor now, you've seen lots of long COVID patients, obviously you understand them better, you know, thankfully some doctors have it, I was going to say, because that means that those poor patients that were not heard or seen for such a long time will definitely be heard by people like you. How do you tackle it? I'm sure you do all the tests that you're going to tell us, but what is your biggest kind of strategy for them that when they present to long COVID?
Throw everything at it. That has been my approach. But the one you're talking about in terms of, you know, I very much felt that. I felt physiologically unsafe. I felt like, where can I fall, right? And we were at a time where I trusted the medical system. You know, we trust the medical system that if we get sick, we'll go to hospital and you kind of, they'll make you okay, right? I got sick. I got very sick. I went to hospital. It was not okay. They didn't know what to do with me. They sent me home repeatedly. I felt traumatized by the whole process. And then that reinforced it, right? So I felt more and more sick, and then where can I go? No one can do anything about it. So it very much was like, how do we self-repair? How do we self-regulate here? And part of that was, you know, doing breath work. It was doing introspective work. So looking at sort of some of the traumas that I had in my life and ways to to dissipate them. And breathwork really helped with that, transformational holotropic breathwork. So I recommend that to people. Nutritional changes, time in nature, being kind to yourself, not pushing through. I was always a pushing through person, right? I had double pneumonia and inflammation in my lungs, and I was still going on a 2-hour walk over Dartmoor because that is what I knew what to do. As long as I could move, I thought I was okay. And actually, I was probably making the whole thing worse because I wasn't resting. And if you don't rest, you don't have enough capacity or energy to divert that to the immune system response. So, you know, it was very much a learning process for sure.
Well, you're...
But I do tell people that, you know, we need to look at nutrition, we need to look at supplements, we need to support gut health, we need to look at the clotting that potentially is there, we need to do adequate diagnosis, looking at scans. You know, chest x-rays don't show. I had 6 chest x-rays and they were all told I was normal. I then have a CT scan 3 months later and it's full widespread pneumonitis. So I'm not saying this to scare people. I'm just saying be your own advocate, put yourself out there and ask for the right diagnosis and treatment.
On the back of, I just want to say, because this is interesting, I've gathered in the most common to least common series of symptoms that are now put into what long COVID is. So if people listen to this, if they experience that, they can, you know, this is a beginning of them questioning it. Was it? It's not just them thinking of it. So we have fatigue first, shortness of breath, chest pain. Second is memory and brain fog, which I thought was interesting. You mentioned it. So a lot of people still, you know, will say one of the biggest symptoms of long COVID is memory and brain fog. Sleeping issues, palpitation, dizziness, pins and needles, joint pain. And then comes the mental side after going through all this. Depression, anxiety, and then tinnitus, earache, gastrointestinal problem, digestive issues, then smell and taste, and finally rashes. And I thought this was interesting because it covers so, like most organs, if you think of it, from the skin to all your, you know, all your digestive system, which is made of so many different organs, your lungs, your heart. You know, the only thing I don't find is, which is interesting, was headache, because I know that many people have suffered from headache, but it seems to not come into the really high, well, what people experience mostly. But I find this is so broad, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, we have to make sure we see these people, hear these people, and consider these people as being still ill and do our best to make them feel better. Because I think this has been, as you said, one of the most complicated side of that disease is what people are not saying, this is not normal. You're the doctor, you should just treat me, give me something, tell me something, and just do it. And then it just doesn't happen. And then where do you fall?
Don't know what to do.
Where do you fall? Then it's just like, and then it goes there, and then it doesn't go the right side. I'm fascinated about, and we won't go too much into what we believe it comes from and what to do and the vaccine. What I think though is that I will always push people to listen to people like you who have a combination of a very rational mind and a lot of knowledge, if not immense knowledge, about the body, its physiology, its metabolism, how it works, and at the same time understands that it is still medicine and there is a huge science to it, but there's also a lot of things that we need to feel intuitively, and we have to believe as well and work on our spirituality and all the things, and all these things come together, which I think is the best side of integrated medicine and longevity medicine as you do it, is that people that don't fall into the normal, I would say, symptomatology or the way things should be working are still recognized, because it's terrifying for them anyway.
Yeah, exactly. That's how it feels. It's very much a systems disease, right? But it's what, interestingly, long COVID and the amount of people that have been affected by it is forcing research into systemic disease generally, right? It's not, you know, refer you out to the heart specialist or refer you out to the kidney specialist. It's like, you know, it's like this is everywhere. How do we look at a root cause approach to really improving your health here? And you know, it's tough, but you know, smart people are working on it. I think we just, you know, I think we need a multifaceted approach, right? I think there has to be medicine in there as well, which can reduce viral load. I think there can be, you know, lifestyle things. One of the best things that I found, especially for brain fog, was hyperbaric oxygen therapy. Was very, but again, it's an expense, right? So it's a luxury. although the ME Society is funding it for people with long COVID, interestingly enough.
Nice. I didn't know that.
Sun, UV light, right, is antiviral, anti... And people don't think that, you know, you just hide yourself away and you feel worse. You've got to get out into the light.
I want to finish on something that for me is fascinating, because knowing you, I think we're both similar type A, kind of, you know, we go. That's the thing we kind of do. And I did this all my life. If I had a call or a chair, I would just go out and run it off. I thought, you know, the more I'm going to make the whole machine work and circulation, the more my immune system will find those bugs and get rid of them, and happy days. And now I realize how lucky I was. I thought this was a good theory that I could apply and it worked for me, but it doesn't apply for everyone. And secondly, it doesn't apply for everything. And I think finding this balance between still going out and going into nature and, you know, really using your body, because movement is life, but also not overdoing it, because in case of long COVID, for example, it can be counterproductive. That is where you need to be guided properly by people like you and say, okay, I hear you, we have to find a balance. And this balance point is morphic and move. So be, without being too self-indulgent, but just be self-aware, you know, trust your feeling and go with it. Don't, and share them with me so that we can find the common ground and then establish a protocol, I guess.
Yeah,
Dr. Tam, that. Thank you so much. We're just going to keep it short and sweet. And this was a lovely conversation. We have so many things that we love speaking about, and this is one of them. I will look forward to have you on a podcast again to discuss other matter that we love to chat about: mind-body connection, nervous system, physiology, all sorts of things. And I would love to have you actually on an inflammation and stress chat one of these days. So I think we should organize that, and I'm sure people would love to hear your thoughts on that. For now, thank you so much. I know that you're not feeling 100% today. You look very well though, so that's good. So thank you for still
sticking. A bit of a tan just takes it away, doesn't it? We've had some nice weather here.
Okay, well, so. I'm good. Enjoy it. Go and get some sun and a nice walk in nature. Thank you so much.
There you go.
Thank you guys.
Dr.
See you soon. Take good care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Nice to see you.